Ooh, that's loud. Welcome to the Mayor's Task Force on Infrastructure public hearing. We are still waiting on the arrival of a couple of our task force members who I know were working on a regular 8-to-5 schedule, but we do have a quorum. So I would like to go ahead and get started. We'll start with because this is an official meeting, a roll call. Mr. Whitekemper. Kim.
Here.
Ms. Hedrick.
Here.
Cody.
Here.
Mr. Conway.
Here.
Very good. And we do need an approval of our agenda. So any changes or comments to it?
Make a motion to approve.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Okay. In favor?
Aye.
All right. So this evening is a public hearing. We have put together and made public a series of documents that I hope you've had an opportunity to review, but they are proposed draft recommendations for public hearing review, and then for each of the utilities that this task force is addressing, we have provided a narrative and draft set of recommendations. So I didn't happen to notice, but were there public copies of these available up front?
Yeah. I'll go look.
Thank you. Specifically of the draft recommendations for the public hearing review. So we had some discussion about a variety of ways to manage this public hearing, and talked about going through each utility and asking for comment, or simply opening the floor and allowing people to comment on what they would like to comment on. So based on our current attendance, and that this is a two-hour sort of open house style public hearing, I would like to just allow speakers to come forward and comment on what they'd like to comment on. And I would also add that if you know people who couldn't make it today, or you have other things to say after this hearing, that I strongly encourage you to submit them in writing. We will take the outcomes of this meeting and include them in our final report to council. We have one more scheduled meeting next week, and then we'll be focusing on our final report and preparing to present that. So please don't hesitate to comment in that format also. Any comments from task force members before we get started? All right. Well, then I will open the public hearing with a couple caveats. We want people to be able to speak to each utility and say what they want to say, but we also need to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to participate. So when you hit 5 minutes, I'm going to let you know that that has happened, and I would really appreciate it if people would then begin to wrap up their remarks. It is, as I just said.
There's no copies of anything back there.
I'm texting Carol Schaefer right now.
My name is Ken Midkiff. I live at 1005 Bellevue Court here in Columbia. I have brief comments on four items. First, I think we need to take care of this is a city, needs to take care of existing problems such as sewage backup and basement and raw sewage running into Flat Branch and Hinkson Creek before indulging in any new problems such as Henderson Branch. Secondly, there are very few people who benefit from the new sewer line or expansion or upgrade or whatever it is along Flat Branch Creek. It primarily benefits downtown developers of student apartments. And fine, I have no problem with that as long as they pay for it. It doesn't benefit me at all. And I live in the fourth ward. It doesn't benefit anybody else in town. It only benefits a few rich folks in the downtown area. And fine, let them pay for it if it benefits them. But don't bill me for other people's benefits. Thirdly, street closures, same thing. Right now, somebody needs to, I guess that'd be John Glasscock. Sorry, John. He's pretending he can read. But somebody needs to determine how much the street closure actually costs. The streets are public, owned by the public, and the public deserves to be paid back if the streets are closed. And I didn't see anything about this in your report. Maybe it's there. I quickly scanned it, but I didn't see anything about the report. Finally, the last thing I would recommend is, you sort of mentioned this in G and H, but you don't outright say it. And I think it needs to be said more specifically and more directly that the task force or a commission or whatever it's to be called needs to be continued on a more permanent basis to review projects that the city is proposing to develop. So that's my recommendation, that the task force be continued on a permanent basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Midkiff.
Are there any questions?
It's not a question, but I would make the comment, Mr. Midkiff, that we do have a discussion in our global recommendations regarding making sure that sewer and stormwater are utilities that have a citizens advisory function working with them, and that we think there are a number of methods to go about utility advisory and oversight, and we hope council will think through those carefully.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. My name is John Clark. I live at 403 North 9th Street. And thank you for having this public hearing. And in particular, Tracy's been at it 6 months. The rest of you have been at it a year. I mean, that's a lot of dedication and a lot of time attempting to think on serious kind of things. But I will open up, and I wrote one of these things a long time ago. What I see is this: the task force was set up as a follow-through to the work of the Downtown Columbia Leadership Council. They pointed out all the problems with the lack of planning, all this kind of stuff. Now, they started out thinking about downtown, but in essence, most everything they said about infrastructure applied across the city in terms of the absence of planning. And there were two thrusts from their work. One was, you got to think long-term. I mean, you really have to. We're not about what we're going to do in the next 3 years or the 5 years. You got to really think long term. Well, obviously, to do that, you have to do current assessments of the different kind of things. But the other thing was, we need real outside professional independent help to structure that planning. And I believe their model was, there are a number of firms that do that kind of stuff that could have worked with staff for input, not to be the subject matter or think they know about infrastructure planning in particular. First of all, they're just way too busy. And then those two groups working with a group of citizens, now whether it was a Blue Ribbon Commission, whether it was a task force, whether long-term. Actually, one of your recommendations is to really beef up the advisory commissions around utilities on a long-term basis. And I would say, with respect to their charge in that matter, in long-term infrastructure planning, that notion of outside independent professionals guiding, actually bringing all of that kind of expertise. For instance, they would ask for all kinds of information. The staff doesn't even track or keep. But they would know that would be necessary for those kind of things. Having said that, I think the task force was designed by McDavid to fail. It was to basically block the thrust out of DCLC, and between its composition, too big, too diverse, the charge was too varied. It was designed that the staff would have way too much influence in terms of amount of information, and it interferes with the free flow of information. Having said that, and having looked over the recommendations that were turned in, there's some really good things there. actually, I see your work as a real great step forward. It could be wasted. Oh, by the way, I should say, I believe Chris Kelly was charged with a substantive agenda. And when Tracy replaced him, Tracy has a history of being interested in process, not specific outcome agendas. I think Chris went the other way. So that was a positive step. But just having somebody who was process-oriented would not change the fundamental flaws in the structure, the charge, and so forth. Having said that, a number of your recommendations actually seem to have escaped the overweening influence of the staff in a number of ways. You've had outside people come and provide you with really good information. And so I applaud that, and I think the council will appreciate that. So, but I don't think that worked with the electric utility, and I don't think it worked as much as it could have with basically major streets and roads. It's not streets and this way. It's major streets and roads. It's a major kind of thing. And because you didn't have enough time, you also didn't call people like Ben Landere, who could really explain the whole development fee regime to you in detail, or people from Boone County Resource who understand these big scale transportation planning things. The biggest things and the biggest influence of the staff was in the electric world. The notion that a line extension policy is something where the people who are signing on are going to be paying for the extension through their fees, and then, by the way, using the same language to describe the system equity a charge fee as the same kind of thing was a failing, and I hope you will eliminate that from your final recommendation. I looked at the 2007 reports. I looked at the contract of Virchow and Krauss. They were asked to provide models about connection fees, could be line extension, using an equity model, and they did so for water and for wastewater. They did not, and I understand maybe the staff talked them out of it. But the models that are in this report, is that 5 minutes, are seriously flawed. If you don't do it, take them out entirely, but to misunderstand them completely and leave them in the report will do the task force a disservice. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Any questions or comments for Mr. Clark? All right.
Hello. My name is Jill Lucht, and I live at 100 Aldea, which is a sewer hotspot, as you probably know. but I want to start by thanking you very deeply for the work that you've put into this. I really appreciate it, especially on behalf. I mean, I want to speak on behalf of my neighborhood and say that we thank you for looking into sewers and stormwater, which affects us very greatly. So I have a couple comments and a couple questions. Hopefully that won't take 5 minutes, but I want to echo what the first speaker said about Henderson Branch. To me, when that was approved by the voters, and I don't remember the specific price tag, but you all know it was much lower than the price tag that exists now. And to me, that's not the same project. And so I don't think that we should move forward with that extension with our public dollars, because we didn't know what the true cost of that project was when we approved it. On page 3 of the recommendations, so the stormwater utility should begin with a process of acquiring necessary data. Just that recommendation in general I thought was very good, and I wanted to be on record as saying that. I also thought that under streets and sidewalks, so that's page 5, point E, under streets and sidewalks. I really do think it's important that developers pay for the cost of that street destruction. Like, I'm a biker. I bike the city streets, and aside from the major roads that I talked about earlier, the downtown construction has really deteriorated my commute, and so I know those are going to have to be fixed, and I would rather not have to pay for that myself, or you know, collectively as a public pay for that, fixing those roads that have been destroyed by the developers. So then going to sewers, my most important favorite thing. Under the rain gauge system, I know that you probably are all very familiar with the weather data at Sanborn Field, and I was curious, like, why under point B, getting the automated rain gauge system, like, what were the thoughts behind that or the need for that? I feel like we get really good weather data from both the Sanborn Field and out at the airport, but is that better than what we already get or have?
It's more rain gauges.
Okay, so it's more spaces, more places.
More locations to be monitored for rainfall.
Okay.
But no problem with the Stammer Field data. It's just not reflective of the whole city's rainfall.
Okay. It's very accurate for my neighborhood, but I know that the city is much bigger than that. So I was just curious. I didn't know how expensive a system like that would be, and if it rains 7 inches at Sanborn Field, I feel like, you know, that's a major rain event, and that might be enough information. On page 8, point E, I had some questions for clarification there, and I apologize that I didn't know this coming in. What is meant by that we would put greater responsibility on the homeowner or the private property owner to identify those connection problems with the sewer, the city sewer? So I know that part of my sewer line is mine and parts of the city's, but to me, it makes sense that the public utility that we all pay taxes to would identify problems and then help us fix them. But I wasn't sure, what does this mean? Does that mean that is not what would happen? Or would the private homeowner be in charge of every once in a while checking their sewer status? Or what would...
Maybe making a regulation that the homeowner has to provide a certificate that the sewer has been inspected when they sell their property.
Okay.
Or periodically when the rental property... Rental property has to be inspected now.
Okay.
Every 6 years, I believe, if there are no violations. But perhaps making it part of the rental compliance maintenance code.
Okay. I just think, so as a resident in the first ward, I think that's a huge financial responsibility for people who are owning homes that aren't very valuable. And to me, the city should help with that. And I thought maybe it could be on the model, like point H, where you're talking about the backflow prevention program. So I had to put a backflow preventer in my property, which then failed because the INI was so bad on our street that even a backflow preventer wouldn't prevent sewer water from coming into our house. I very much applaud the city helping finance backflow preventers for homeowners that have lower income. And I would like to see something similar to that in point E. I don't know if you want to target it to neighborhoods based on property values or based on household income or how you would want to base that. But I think that many of the people in my neighborhood would not be able to afford that.
Right. And I would just clarify, Ms. Luck, that on E, it is talking about INI, and it's specifically talking about things similar to the rental housing inspection piece, making sure that your downspouts aren't going into the sewer, making sure that your sump pump is connected into the right place and not the wrong place. So,
so this isn't like the sewer line leaving my house and
no,
connecting to the city, because
right.
That's really expensive.
Right, and it would be in accordance with the city utility continuing to do its work, like smoke testing and those sorts of things, to ensure that they're managing INI properly.
Okay. So I'm that's not very expensive to, like, move your storm, your gutter, or your sump pump hose. So that makes it more clear to me. Then I'd be more comfortable with that. But if you're talking about that connection that runs from my front or from the water or the sewer line going out of my house to the city, I've had friends that have had that. It's a several thousand dollar fix. And you know, the city could and I would say should help us finance that. Which is part of point F, I think.
Right. Right. Okay. And F actually follows up on that.
Yes.
And yeah. recommends that the city assume responsibility for connection points.
Perfect.
Yep.
Okay. Am I at 5 minutes? Is that okay. There was just, I think this is my last comment. On page 10, under C, that the city would, the differentiation between people outside of the city limits and people inside the city limits paying for the sewer charges. To me, if you are outside the city limits, you probably cost more to service your property. And so I'm pretty comfortable with the further away you are from the city boundary, I'm okay like adding fees to that because, you know, for those of us who live in the city, our sewers are closer. But anyway, that's it.
Any questions or responses to the speaker? Thank you.
Afternoon. I'm Ben Londere. I reside at 2601 Chapelwood Terrace. I read the report, not every single word in detail, but I applaud you with the concept of those who benefit should be paying. The devil is in the details. I've served on some commissions and task force, and the concepts sound great, but the political reality is there's a segment of the population that has a lot of power that will thwart the best of goals. But I hope that something positive will come from it. The biggest one, I think that generally we're in relatively good shape on development fees, except in the area of roads. And there's a lot at stake here, and the numbers are massive. We think our sewers are expensive, but if we were to build the roads that are needed, it would far exceed the cost of our sewers. We just put up with waiting and waiting at traffic lights and so forth. There was an article in the Missourian years ago about the 5-minute rush period. Well, it's no longer 5 minutes, and it's going to get worse. I hope that we can come up with some solutions where those who are benefiting are making the pay, who are paying for it. I did have one concern, and I know that Mr. Whitekemper and I have discussed this a little bit, has to do with requiring landlords to be your collection agency. When a landlord attempts to get money from a delinquent renter, he has to go to court. And that expense is, you're attempting to transfer that expense from the city to the landlords. And I suggest that that's a little unfair. There is a mechanism available right now for accomplishing that, though, and that is the landlord reversion. It is currently voluntary, and by this single turn of a switch, if that were made as required by all landlords, you have the mechanism. But you also need to include in that mechanism a way to protect the landlords from the unruly tenant who knows that the landlord's going to get stuck with this, and so they don't pay. In the landlord reversion procedure, the utilities are not turned off, they're just switched over. I've had tenants try to beat the system and do that. You need to come up with a mechanism to prevent that from happening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben, that question. As a landlord, how would you feel if the city did a credit check on your prospective tenant?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
What would you feel? Right now, the city doesn't do credit checks for prospective utility customers. They don't check credit history. Anybody walks in the doors gets...
Oh, yes. Well, landlords are supposed to do that.
I say, how do you feel about the city doing credit checks on your prospective tenants and turning some of them down?
Well, I don't know how that would work.
If they did credit checks on everybody, someone get turned down.
Yeah. Well, there are problems that you need to work through no matter what system you come up with. I was just pointing out that there's a cost to landlords, and if they're going to get stuck with a $300 utility bill or a $600 utility bill, they're going to have to charge more rent to protect themselves in those cases, or maybe have higher security deposits. I don't know the answer, but I'm just trying to point out some concerns. We've had this discussion before.
If I may, Mr. Landry, I think I would like to concur with you in some ways, but also mention the flip side of the story. One of the things we've tried to do as a task force is, and certainly I have personally, is take into account the concept of equity and social equity. And utilities are basic needs. People need to have potable water. They need to have reliable sanitary sewer. They need electricity. They need to not be freezing in the winter. And there are always going to be people who can't pass credit checks for reasons that they have little control over. Either they're starting out, they don't have a credit history, or they're affected by larger economic trends that they have little control over, and they still have basic needs. So if we're going to share those costs, I would prefer to share it across our community rather than to make affordable housing even harder to maintain in this community by putting all that risk onto the landlords. So thank you for bringing that up. I think it's a tremendously important issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
One. How do you feel about charging a landlord for a vacant property?
Charging them for what, sir?
A minimum charge for vacant property.
Vacant property. That's the way the landlord reversion would be a way to take care of that problem. When in landlord reversion, when the tenant has the stuff turned off, it immediately is billed from that point on to the landlord. Then you could have a minimum charge for each of the utilities. For example, as Lowell Patterson told me years ago, it costs money to have a sewer available for you to use. It costs money to have a water line there for you to use when you want it. The trash truck, the solid waste, they have to go around all the different places, whether you live there or not, whether it's vacant or so. The landlord reversion is one mechanism. There may be a better one, but it could work. It needs a little tweaking for it to make it fair to everybody.
Would the landlord be able to shut the meter off at any point in time?
I usually left the utilities on so that we could clean it, we could show it, things like that. If if it was in the wintertime, you have to have a little bit of heat. And
unless you winterize it.
Or you could winterize it, but hopefully you'll get it rented. A vacant house is cost, or vacant apartments cost you money. So you need to, a landlord needs to invest to get it rented, is my perspective. And then I lost my train of thought, sorry.
Could you shut the utilities off? Should there be a charge if you shut the utilities off?
If the utilities are turned off, you could still bill the landlord for the
minimum charge,
the basic charge for having the service available. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I do have a quick clarifying, if you don't mind. We were talking about when we were discussing a concept of the landowner providing the stormwater fee, because the stormwater fee, whether you're a utility customer or not, is still going to occur. So the storm is going to, it's going to rain and it's going to run off. So you can turn the utilities off, but you can't turn the rain off. So what's your feelings on or concept on using a collection fee to the landowner versus the ratepayer for stormwater for impervious surface?
I think the landlord reversion would cover that.
It would, I would think.
Because somebody's going to get billed for that basic service. When the service is on, the tenant will pay for it. When the service is reverted to the landlord, then the landlord would pay those basic services.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Does that answer your question adequately?
Okay.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Landry or comments?
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Mark Farnan, 103 East Brandon, Columbia, Missouri. I have read most of the draft report that was issued and had either some questions or opinions about a few of these things, and I'll try and be quick. I couldn't agree more with what Mr. Landry just said. That was something that jumped out at me, and I do believe that it is a question of social equity, much like the chair said. The way I looked at it was that the electric users are not the customers for electricity of the landlord. They are the city's customers. And that if people need grace, or if they need a bill to be reviewed, that is the provision that has to do with the provisional of electricity, or if they're having a hard time and they need heat and it's cold, then it seems to me that the city should be in charge of that and have that policy in place and allow that grace to that customer because it's their customer. And so I look at it from that point of view rather than as a third party pass through who we're going to try and collect from someone else. So I couldn't agree more with Ben on that than the way he said it. There is another issue in here that I thought merited at least a comment, and that is the concept of doing that, like when they did Northeast Columbia Area Plan, mm-hmm. and there was a traffic study that was conducted, and it was done jointly with Boone County and the City of Columbia to try and determine needs for the future of what might be built on these 1,800 acres, what might be built in the future, and in terms of road infrastructure. And if that area of land were to develop out completely or fully, then what might be those costs for road infrastructure in the next 20 to 50 years that might be expected? And there is mention in here of that to forecast the traffic generation and what we might need in terms of those different parts. But What it does not mention in here, and what I think is a big issue, is when do you pay? We have seen this issue in the kneecap area where people had either, and this, and it has affected a couple of different people in different, very different ways, and MoDOT sometimes pays for some of the improvements, and I don't know how you treat MoDOT roads if they're not city streets, and I don't know how you do cross the lines between Boone County and what they're responsible for and what the city is responsible for. But if there is some amount that is determined that in 20 years we'll need these roads, if it develops out fully, and you allocate that based on the percentage of development that you intend to do in that developed area, do you have to pay it before it's built? Do you have to pay it all before it's built? Do you have to pay it in one lump sum, or should there be a mechanism that allows you to pay it over time, or to collect it over time, or to generate it over time, which has been done in various ways already in that kneecap area, either the creation of a TDD or the partial payment by the different constituents who would be using it, the developer, the county, the city, MoDOT. And you would need to pay for it when it's built, but what if in 20 years that road that you thought was going to be an extension to Mexico gravel never materializes, and you already paid for it? So this doesn't address that, I don't think, and I would hate to see people get the bill right up front, because I think, once again, it does go to affordability issues. There is one part in here that talks about what would trigger a new traffic study, and how are those traffic studies, when would you have to do that to make sure that what you're doing doesn't have an inordinate amount of impact on something else? But the threshold is not described here, and I think that's very important. And I think this was mostly written in terms of people who are contemplating, or I think this was created because people think in terms of subdivisions. But what about small properties? What if I built a 16-unit apartment house in town? Does that generate the need for what is ostensibly a fairly expensive traffic study to determine the impact that my project will have on what is all around me and being used every day, whether I'm there or not? And I might add to the load, I might add 100 trips per day, maybe, or maybe 30, and maybe that's what the traffic study would determine. But there's not a threshold that is identified here, and I think that the devil is in that detail and really, really, really needs to be thought through, because I think, once again, you'll add a lot of cost. I don't have a lot of time. There are so many things in this, and I'm not going to touch on it, but I'm sure all these other smart people here today will. Let me go to the electric utility portion and the functional recommendations. And there is a whole section in here that indicates that this group believes that the proposed Mill Creek electrical substation should be built as originally designed and be connected by appropriate transmission lines to benefit the downtown area. As originally designed is an interesting phrase, because I think as originally proposed, this was not necessarily to solve the problems of downtown. It was originally designed and pitched and told that it would address the needs of the growing southern part of the city. And that's why the placement of it was chosen in the southern part of the city. And that's how everything was discussed initially when the different meetings were held, and that this is, they showed the growing area, they showed the Boone Electric service area, they showed how this had gone around it, and this was where growth was, not downtown. Now it is that downtown is almost out of power, and that it is slowly being drained. I think that there are other options that can be considered other than the original proposal that in one of the original proposals that indicated that if the Mill Creek Electrical substation would have to be built, that the transmission lines would have to run along option A. Other options do exist. Some are still being explored. There is an option E on the table, and regardless of the fact whether this group or the Water and Light Commission reviewed it, it's being explored by this same city staff that put forward option A, and I think we can do it. I don't think that we have taken into think that we have taken into account the full impact of that original proposal on the people and on the homes and the businesses that line it. I think you waste $5 million by relocation of existing power lines on that route. And I think that we should go back to the drawing board, not accelerate construction of a flawed plan. Mill Creek was intended to accommodate growth, not fix problems that people created downtown. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions or comments for Mr. Farnan?
Thank you for your time. I know these are long days.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Maria Orapallo. I live at 208 East Briarwood Lane here in Columbia. I did read the documents and the background documents. I have no expertise in any of this. Two things flew out at me that I'm really not asking a question, but I really would like you to keep into consideration. when parking on Broadway was redone a few years ago, there's only one handicapped parking space. The City of Columbia has made commitments to the disabilities community, but they are rarely involved in the conversation up front. And when I noticed reading through the recommendations, Get About Columbia was there, but the Disabilities Commission was not. Please consider that you all don't know what other people need. We need to have a representative there. The other is a little more nuanced. Electric power comes to us. In one way it comes to us is through purchased power. And the statement in the was multiple long-term contracts with ABCDE. Who made these long-term contracts? Who reviews these long-term contracts? Who approves the interconnection agreement between staff and City Council? You have in place committees that have been somewhat vetted, appointed by City Council to look at these things, who might have some expertise that the City Council does not have. Consider running these things through them. We currently have a long-term contract for purchase of energy that Herman, Missouri, is currently trying to get out of the contract because a 40-year contract on technology is ridiculous in this day and age when technology moves faster than 10 years. To have a 40-year contract in place just binds us, and it prevents us from coming up with different options because we're committed to that. So again, however, if any of this stuff makes sense, I'll be glad to answer any more questions, but I think I would like to see that addressed, that just because we have a contract or we have agreements and we're stuck with it, that also means we're stuck with that expense that might or might not serve us well.
Thank you. Are there questions or comments for Mrs. Orapallo?
Can you tell me again the name of the disability? Is it the Disability Commission?
We have a Disability Commission.
Commission.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Kim Fallis. I live at 4805 Muirfield Court. Thank you, first of all, for all of the effort that you guys have spent and the time that you have put in, the countless hours I'm sure that it took to come up with this report and all of the recommendations that are included in it. I'm here this evening specifically about something that was included on page 11 under the electric utility, where it refers to the city approaching a complete loss of spare electric capacity downtown. And I'm coming with this concern because a couple of us met with Dan Clark, Ryan Williams, and Dave Storvik several months ago. I don't know if you guys all have met them or if you know them, but they're all employees of the city who have been involved in the transmission process. And during our conversation, we repeatedly asked them, what is the current load downtown? What are the needs downtown? We repeatedly asked, and they repeatedly clarified that the electrical capacity downtown is actually adequate for the foreseeable future, thanks to some recent bolstering from, I believe it was the Bolstead substation just a few years ago, where they brought additional capacity into downtown. And so in addition to that, we had a meeting in August where city staff indicated that the mayor's suggestion of option E for the transmission line controversy that's been going on was actually could be very viable. And indeed, there's a definite possibility that it could be done even without building the Mill Creek substation and doing that by bolstering up a couple of existing substations where there's already room. And by exploring these options where we could share existing lines, share existing easements, share existing rights of way, and potentially even the structures themselves, and then also by using existing substations, we could potentially save the city a boatload of money. And city staff even agreed to that. And so it concerned me that there was this suggestion that we need to rush really quickly and move forward with this Mill Creek substation when just recently three city staff indicated to us during a meeting that the immediate need downtown is not urgent. I do agree that it's necessary to plan for the future. I do agree that we need to do something for this whole, like I said, electrical catastrophe. But I think it's wrong to push through this Mill Creek substation with this urgent need to get it done immediately, because I think we're still waiting for a lot of information about what the alternatives are with what either the mayor proposed with this option E or other opportunities to share some of these costs with some of our other local providers. Thank you.
Does anyone have questions for this speaker? Thank you. Are there other commenters? All right. Well, the public hearing is ongoing until 7, but I will go ahead and open up for general comments by task force members, public, and staff, should we have any. No? Okay. All right. Should we?
Well, while we're sitting here, what Kim brought up about meeting with the city electric staff and them saying there was enough capacity for the foreseeable future was not how it was represented to us. I was just making that statement is why we came up with the recommendation that we did.
Well, I think part of it, in my personal opinion, I think part of that stems from the original plan for the whole transmission concept that had been, there's been so much conversation about for quite a long time. And the original conversation, when it was brought before council, included this Mill Creek substation. And so I think that's why there's been a lot of ongoing conversation about the need for it, which is why we were so interested when we were talking with these three city engineers about how necessary is it really to have this substation. Is it ideal to have it? Would they like to have it? I think the answer is probably yes. Is it really necessary to have it? The answer that we got from a multitude of different people was no. There are ways to accomplish what we need to accomplish to get the redundancy and to get the additional capacity even without building that substation. And it can be done through beefing up existing substations, which some of them would tell you is not what they think would be necessarily ideal, and in their engineering minds isn't how they would like to necessarily see it be done. But they have all agreed that it is definitely a possibility to do it that way, and have also agreed that that could save us a lot of money, and that the possibility then of sharing lines with some of our counterparts, Central Electric or Ameren or whoever it may be that already has existing structures and rights of ways. We do it already on the east side of town with Central Electric. We own the structure. We own one of the lines. Central Electric owns one of the lines. So we share the cost of maintaining all of that. And there are opportunities for us to do that to create additional capacity either on the south side of town, going through what already exists with Central Electric in Rockbridge State Park. I don't know if you've ever driven out there through the grasslands. Do you know that area at all? But there are areas where that already exists. And then on the north side of town with what the mayor suggested with option E, where you could share with Ameren. And so I think that's why there has been this continued conversation about Mill Creek, because it was part of the original conversation. And sometimes when that's in your mind, sometimes it's kind of hard to get out of that box and think, are there ways we can do this and accomplish what we need, but save our city a lot of money?
Not to get too deep into it. I take what you're saying. The way it was represented to us, if I remember correctly, and like I said, I don't want to get too deep into it, I guess, because the electric staff's not here to correct either of us probably. But there's two reasons for that, and there's two different components to the substation. And one was regulatory compliance with NERC, and that's coming up in 2020 or 2021, that we have to meet that. We have to do these redundancies, as you mentioned, which could be accomplished by this north route. There's also the capacity, the growing need in the south side town, and the loss of capacity in the downtown area that really wouldn't address the Route E. You still would need the substation or a rerouting of feeders to gain additional capacity. So
we did have conversations about how ways that you could address that. And some of the city staff did agree that if you went with option E, you do still need to come up with alternatives on ways to offload some so that you can have greater capacity downtown. Coming back to the fact that they all said for the foreseeable future, and I said 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and they're like, you know, for the foreseeable future, we're fine downtown, because they recently bolstered downtown from the north.
Rebel Hill.
Yeah. But with option E, there are ways to bolster up existing substations to provide the redundancy that meets all of those requirements, is what we were told by city staff, and on several different occasions. And again, I come back to, that's not necessarily what in their mind is ideal, but it serves our purposes and meets our needs and allows us to consider in the meantime, in the next 20 years that this could provide our capacity, opportunities to explore, you know, solar or other methods of energy sources for our system. And I might also point out that our energy consumption has actually been going down. It's much lower now than it was than they anticipated it would be. And they were saying it would be over 300 megawatts, and it's, our peak was set in 2011 at 277. So they said it was going to continue to go up and up and up, and in fact, it's actually gone down. And part of that is because of energy compliant appliances, and some of it is because builders have new codes that help with all of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I assume we're at 3 minutes. So I will follow up and say, from the comments I've heard from other people And since this was a public input session for you all to get more information, I would conclude that you've heard enough new input that you didn't know about, enough different perspective on things that you didn't know about, basically to lead you to revise some of your recommendations, maybe delete them. Some of them you may have thought were based on solid information you didn't know. Of course, there's always the issue about saying, well, obviously, there's a lot more information we need, that we now have some information about where we could get it. You might ask for an extension of the time. There is a move definitely on the council to extend, certainly for the downtown, the administrative thing. You might consider that. You might not. You were set for an original year. But the second thing, and I want to make, I'm really glad that Mark Farnan spoke, because he spoke to this electric issue very clearly and said, it was obvious a whole bunch of considerations were not taken into account with option A, and that's a whole bunch of impacts and so forth. In fact, we wasted money trying to gimmick public opinion on that. But he did ask a question also about something that I think Cody and I, well, maybe one of the few things, agree on, is the real value of the Northeast Transportation Plan. And so he was worried about the threshold. Actually, if you'll remember, my recommendation, it might be some, is you don't wait for a development. And actually, we have developed areas for which, in the South and Southwest, you start out, and you might beef up your recommendations to say, in order to be able to plan better, in order to be able to plan our infrastructure better, we need to go back and complete the large area studies that we did in the Northeast and in the East, do them for the Northwest, do them for the Southwest, and then follow up those with the kind of transportation planning studies. Now, these, in some cases, are about areas that are already developed or partially developed, but they would give us a lot of the same kind of information, much more complex for areas that are already developed. It would be really useful in thinking about the cities constantly coming up, or the staff, with what are we going to do about Chapel Hill and this, and what are we going to do about Nifong? Somebody may have an idea in mind, but that kind of broad-based study, which would advance the goals that you outline in one of your recommendations for doing those kind of studies, actually would lay that to rest. And Mark's question, to some extent, will be answered, because to the extent we've done those kind of studies rather than waiting for a development to want to do something, then those developers will have an option to use what's there. They will have an option to do some, but what it amounts to is they'll have an awful lot of predictability up front. So my 2.5 minute additional comments. So I hope you'll kind of take the input today and clearly rethink some of your recommendations and maybe actually seek some significant additional information from people who know something about some of these areas that you haven't yet consulted with. Thanks a bunch for your hard work.
Just a second, John. So for the regional traffic study, the timing.
Oh, about the payment?
Yeah, so to me that
actually, I'm glad he mentioned that.
Please
go ahead.
Let Cody talk.
But I have a suggestion too.
Yeah, so that to me would be, you would pay that as if it was a development fee. It would be due when you pull your building permit, like the 50 cent per square foot is due, except
and
for
which entity would be pulling which building permit?
Which, what do you mean, which
for permit? A house or a building?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Not at the time of platting.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's, there would be other ways, you know, I think you would be able to, if you built part of the infrastructure that was shown on the plan, in the regional traffic study, you should be able to get credit for that, because
absolutely,
you built the part that they were saying needs to be built. Also, as far as the threshold for new traffic studies, I think you were saying, or maybe that was Mark that was saying that, but
he was worried about that.
Yeah, but I think that would just be taken care of in that it would be regional. The only time that you would have a threshold to do your own study would be if you varied from the assumptions of the regional traffic study itself. So you wouldn't be just every time an office use came about. But if you tried to put an office in a residential area, then maybe you would have to look at, you know, doing it.
You make exactly the case that I would make. That's why I think we should not. I mean, Boone County led this to get the city to do this because there was so much vacant land up there. Actually, they'd earlier done one down south around Gans. What I'm saying is your recommendation should be, and they also were very clear when I talked to them, they were able to do that because there had been a northeast area planning process. It wasn't the best in the world, but it was there. We've learned how to do those better. Doing those kind of processes for the north, the northwest, the west, and the southwest, followed up with this, and I would think those would be very powerful recommendations that support the long-term infrastructure planning for exactly the reasons you mentioned. To address the issue about the timing, I've heard this many times, and it is. I've worked with developers for years. I used to work for developers. This idea about the timing of payments, it would definitely come with the building permits, not when a plat's happened. But even on projects that build out over time, projects don't sell out in one day. So these kind of things, as long as the people who were subject to them were willing to accept liens on their property, we could phase in when the actual cash moved, but the liability would attach so that the payment schedule, the cash flow, much more clearly matched their revenue flow. And those kind of things would be very worth looking into. It's something that has not been adequately addressed, and I'm not sure by the city or anybody else, but I think that's a very fruitful area of agreement between the development community, ones who develop big sites as well as specific buildings, because that, as long as there is the guarantee through liens and these kind of things, that's something we can deal with on the public side as well as the private. Does that?
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Answer that at all?
Yeah, you spoke to what I was.
Thanks so much.
All right. Additional comments? All right.
I'd say so.
Thank you very much. We will be adjourned. And again, I encourage folks, if you have additional ideas or know folks who do, to be in touch with us, submit them via writing, or we're glad to speak to folks. Thank you.